This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant. It's fun to have Michael Bumpus in there.
He's awesome.
Our NFL playoff coverage is brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare.
And yes, it is.
We're excited to be joined right now. We've got a guy that I've known for several years covering the NFL, Greg Rosenthal, who's now with NFL.com. He's with us here on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Greg, we appreciate you joining us.
Maybe we're getting him. Super Bowl, Danny. Where are you at?
Well, you know that I'm kind of a schlub these days, so they don't export me to all the finest games such as the NFL.com. We both know that I'm a general menace when I get out in public, so they have to keep that at a minimum. I noticed that you've been spending some time hanging out in a very dangerous corner of the world, which is Seahawks Twitter, Greg.
Yes, I love Seahawks Twitter, though. I mean, you have to think you're the smartest person in the room to be accepted in, and so I qualify there. And then you have to have strangely conflicted takes about Pete Carroll, which I do too. So it's like I fit right in, and I like seeing what's going on. It's definitely the smartest and the most obnoxious, you know, Twitter following, I think, of any fan base out there.
You had a piece up on NFL.com, Greg, and it talked about things that teams in the NFC can do to catch the San Francisco 49ers. And you had a really interesting theory that I think a lot of Seahawks Twitter, who has conflicted feelings on not just Pete Carroll, but also I think the other members of the coaching staff, regarding their offensive coordinator and Brian Schottenheimer. Can you lay it out for the people?
Yeah, I hate, killing a coach and asking for a change, because obviously Brian Schottenheimer knows, you know, more about football than I ever will. But watching Russell Wilson in an offense that to me is a 1980s, 1990s, old school type of offense just seems like a waste of resources, for lack of a better word. And they can be efficient at times, and they had their moments in the 2019 season. But I think when you have a pretty middling defense, and unless they get a big-time infusion of talent in Seattle, I think they're going to stay a middling defense. Like, I want to see them maximize Russell Wilson. I want them just, you know, spread things out to look a little more current, to be a pass-first type of team, because I think Russell can certainly handle that. And I just can't imagine that happening with Brian Schottenheimer as the coach.
We're talking to Greg Rosenthal here of NFL.com. Is this a matter that Russell has kind of played his way up and through Pete Carroll's philosophy? Because the challenge with Schottenheimer is that it's not just Brian Schottenheimer. It's Pete Carroll. Brian Schottenheimer is constructed an offense toward what Pete wants in terms of balance. And is Russell at the point where he's now in some respects being held back by the offense, do you think?
Right, exactly. And so it makes you wonder, you know, look, they're not going to change coaches at this point. That would be a total shock. But even the next coach, I wouldn't have confidence that Pete Carroll like goes in a different kind of more spread out way. I mean, he's the one that hired Brian Schottenheimer, you know, coming off some, you know, rough jobs really in the NFL. And yeah, I don't want to get carried away. Like I said, it's been a pretty efficient offense for parts of the Schottenheimer run. But again, like Russ, I don't know. I just want to see Russ cook. It's kind of like I wanted to see with Aaron Rodgers, him in a different system after being Mike McCarthy for a while. Like, you enjoy watching these players so much, and you feel like they get to a certain point in their career and can't go any further with the current coaches they have. And yeah, you know, Russ is over 30 now, and it's like I want to see before his career is up, like try a different offense, which is more of a pass first, wide open approach.
What about San Francisco? They won that game against Green Bay while attempting just 8 passes. Do they show an example that you can still win and get to the Super Bowl and maybe win a championship by running first?
Sure, if you've got Kyle Shanahan's running attack. It's like Kyle Shanahan's running, you know, 13 different running concepts in that game. You know, you think of him as like a zone, you know, scheme guy, and it's like they're doing everything. They are dressing it up in a way that's, you know, very not old school. It's you know, he's a little ahead of the game, so that can work if you have Kyle Shanahan, and they would be willing to pass. They don't trail in games too much, but when they have trailed, they've started to pass like crazy, and they've made good comebacks. So they are you know, a balanced offense. And yeah, if you have Kyle Shanahan, that works, but there's like only one Kyle Shanahan. Maybe there's a couple other game guys who coach the running game close to that well, but I would not put Schottenheimer or anyone in Seattle in that class.
I like that you're using the term "let Russ cook" because that definitely makes you a part of Seahawks Twitter indirectly. If you look though at what the Seahawks might do going forward and what's more likely, I think that it would be more likely for them to potentially try and go the route of San Francisco with that running attack and the way that they do it. And my question, do you feel that Kyle Shanahan, what he's doing in particular over the last year, is something that other teams are going to be able to successfully emulate because it is such a copycat league?
Yes and no. You know, A, they are emulating it around the league in some capacity. I mean, Sean McVay, in many ways, comes from the Kyle Shanahan coaching tree more than anyone else. And some of the things they do running the ball, which has been really effective for the Rams overall, is very similar to that. But look, the stuff Kyle's doing isn't a secret. He's been in the NFL running offenses since the mid-2000s. I mean, he made the Texans offense look a lot better pretty immediately with some, you know, lower tier guys. I remember a year Steve Slayton was, you know, one of the leading rushers in the NFL under Kyle Shanahan. And it's easy to say, yeah, we want to copy what they're doing. It's a lot harder to execute. And the thing that Kyle Shanahan and Andy Reid in this game do better than anyone is they add a lot to their offense every year that's brand new and gives them an advantage where Andy Reid, especially at the beginning of seasons, is usually like a month or two ahead of the rest of the NFL before they start copying.
We're talking to Greg Rosenthal, who works at NFL.com. He's also part of a podcast. You still have your podcast, don't you? The Jessel, Nick, and Rosenthal Vanity Project?
Ooh, yeah. Look at you giving me like a plug for our Comedy Central show. Yeah, that is still rolling. That is somehow something we are stealing money from for.
Well, I would say this. I can't say all of the titles of your episodes on the air because we have restrictions on that. There's one that's called Don't Mess This Up, but one of the words isn't mess. But you also have one because your college, were you roommates with Jeselnik? Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, so Jeselnik, if you're not familiar, you know, he's a comedian. He's got a couple specials on Netflix, kind of famous from the roast. He roasted our president, Donald Trump, back in the day. I was in the audience for that. And, yeah, we're best friends going back to college.
That's
somehow
awesome.
We convinced someone to pay us to hang out together, which is like the greatest thing that's ever happened to me.
The other thing, have you seen Russell's been making the rounds around Media Row. I've got some concerns because I would say that I'm 50% on board with the let Russ cook idea. The reservation that I have is that he's been seen with a man bun recently, and I don't know if we give him that latitude and he's wearing a man bun. I'm a little bit concerned about the overall direction that things are taking stylistically. Have you seen the man bun?
I haven't seen him around. I'm a big fan of the effort and care that went into the social media posts announcing his third child, though. And I think, you know, let Russ cook on social media, too. You know what I mean? And he is. And he's like, he is elite. He is elite.
Do you want to, you need to go back to that picture. Because I agree, it was artfully staged, and there is his beautiful wife is posing in the background. Look at his right shoulder, though. It is unnatural. Like, he's got something funky going on in that shoulder. I don't know if it's a chronic separation of the AC joint that's there, but, like, that was also, I was like, ew, that doesn't look anatomically correct.
You've got a better eye than me. It is one of the joys. I think a friend of mine who I do the show with, Andrew Hawkins, did a great social like a post just showing that the pre Ciara Russ and the post Ciara Russ is just like one of the great transformations and glow ups, I would say, of any media star, sports star that I've seen.
Look at you, hip with the kids, talking about the glow ups. Oh, that was fantastic.
I don't know what I'm doing right now. You're like all staticky. It's like messing me up, and I'm now trying to sound like I'm way younger than I am. I'm an old man like you.
I've enjoyed what you guys have brought to the table. The Around the NFL podcast, I think, is the best NFL podcast out there. And you guys, you know, you cover more than just Seahawks Twitter and such. And I'm really curious as to the vibe that you've gotten out of the Kansas City Chiefs this week. I heard from Adam Schefter that Adam Schefter was struck by how confident Kansas City was. I don't know if confidence necessarily lends itself to cockiness, but I was curious if you got that same kind of vibe.
Yeah, I've learned over the years, and Danny, I would imagine would agree with this, to be careful of like the pre-week, you know, analysis of how the teams seem in their practices. I remember the Panthers seemed like the most confident, ready-to-win team I've ever seen. Both teams are certainly confident. When I listen to Kyle Shanahan and I listen to the approach that they've taken and not really doing things differently than they normally do compared to Kansas City, which seems like they're doing a lot of things, like trying to do extra, trying to maximize everything. They're way outside of Miami and Fort Lauderdale, and they haven't left their hotel all week. I don't know if any of this means anything, but my heart says Kansas City, and like my head and listening to the 49ers and just like kind of watching what they've done says San Francisco.
What have you made of the Frank Clark show, which it really has become in Miami this week?
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that's enjoying the spotlight. He's enjoying being on the stage, and I'm sure both him and Dee Ford are enjoying the fact that they're facing the opposite team. I think it's kind of more of a Dee Ford revenge game because Andy Reid basically bet on Frank Clark as just a better player than Dee Ford. Like, we developed this guy Dee Ford, we could pay him money. No, we would rather not do that. We would rather trade him, and we would rather pay Frank Clark. And I think he's been right. Frank Clark is the better player. He had that pinched nerve for the first half. He wasn't quite as good. But he's the guy out of those two, certainly, that I would expect to be kind of a difference maker on Sunday.
He is Greg Rosenthal. Greg, you've always been one of a guy that I've really enjoyed talking to and getting to know over the years. And I'm really, first of all, just I think it's awesome, all of the different things that you're doing, whether it's the podcast with Anthony Jeselnik or the work you do on NFL.com or the podcast. And we're really grateful for you spending the time joining us.
Thanks, Greg.
You guys are too nice to me. I am uncomfortable with all this praise, but I appreciate it. Thank you.
That is Greg Rosenthal that was with us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline, putting kind of a voice to what some people in the league see, which is the best way to maximize the value of your franchise quarterback is to make the offense revolve more around him. I haven't come to any like deep-rooted conclusions, because just at the point where I get to, like, you know what, I think that's right, I come back to, A, they're a couple of plays away from being back and maybe getting to and past the level that they are. And the other thing is that Russell is a different quarterback in that he makes so many plays that are so-called off schedule that I don't know if having him pass more, does that make their offense even less predictable because he's going to have even more opportunities to freelance?
Yeah, I think that's the extra element that you just mentioned at the very end of that, the ability to freelance. And I suppose maybe he doesn't have the same ability to freelance that he once did because he's 31 years old and he's maybe not as young and not as nimble as he used to be. But, I mean, that is an element of what the Seahawks get when he drops back to pass. Still, it's maybe not what it used to be, but I do think that the idea of passing the ball more, especially early on in games, and not necessarily trying to get a feel for the game with the run, which at times, and I am not going to act like I'm some sort of expert when it comes to figuring out how a running play is called or designed by Brian Schottenheimer, but sometimes it feels like they're almost a minesweeper, where they're just like, all right, we'll just go up the middle, see if this works. All right, we'll go to the right side. All right, we'll go outside the left tackle. Those are not plays that I feel like end up being productive, even though this year, to the Seahawks' credit, to Brian Schottenheimer's credit in particular, they were really effective at running the football. They were great, honestly, like Chris Carson and Rashad Penny. That's what's funny is at the end of the season, I think it magnifies just our feeling on what the offense was and the lack of the cooking that we would like to see Russell do. If they don't get injured, I really do wonder what we're talking about down the stretch, because we got to a point watching this team where they were so just struggling to run the football with a Travis Homer and a Marshawn Lynch that you just thought to yourself, all right, this is just a waste of time. What are you doing here?
It's Danny and Gallant. It's time for us to take a tour around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
Jess.
Hey, what's going on?
Not much.
Wouldn't be another day in the NFL if Tom Brady wasn't making the news. And yeah, he posted this ominous picture, black and white, standing in the tunnel at Gillette Stadium, looking towards the field, walking towards it. Is he saying goodbye? Is he returning? What does it mean?
So artistic.
Adam Schefter says this is not. He's been told that this has nothing to do with his football future. Then why post it?
Jess, you really sound like you appreciate his artistic greatness.
Obviously. I'm in awe of it.
Yeah, I think you should be.
He's messing with people, right? I mean, he can't be ignorant of the impact this has.
He's actually pretty good at Twitter. It's annoying.
Yeah, he's good at social media. He knows exactly what he is doing here, and he knows exactly the situation that he's currently in. So I'm imagining that what Schefter's saying is right. It probably has something to do with an advertisement. But as someone who has watched 1990s sitcoms and is very aware of how this 1990s sitcoms typically end, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Boy Meets World, there's an empty room, there's a person looking at the empty room, and then they slowly walk out of the room at the very end. It does make me feel like the end of a 1990s sitcom where Tom Brady is either about to retire or about to go elsewhere.
He said he's not retiring, right? We know that. He's not retiring.
So that means elsewhere. Moving on to another place.
It could be Nashville. He was supposedly in Nashville checking out schools.
Apparently, yeah.
They're moving to New York, maybe. I know that there's been talk about he and Giselle relocating here, and maybe then he goes and plays in Miami in the interim.
There's so much speculation as to where he goes. I think the Tennessee one is a really interesting one, just given that Mike Vrabel's there. Wouldn't it be something if Mike Vrabel and Tom Brady stuck it to Bill Belichick?
You're telling me that Tom Brady, who's married to a supermodel and has spent the past, 20 years being worshipped as a demigod in Boston, is going to go to Nashville?
What, is Nashville that much of a step down? I mean, honestly, as someone who lived in Boston
it's a great city.
14 years, I got sick of it.
It's an awesome city. Nashville's fantastic. It's not as big a media center as either the place he's coming from or the other place that he might be moving to.
But going back to the picture, actually, this is probably the best description of it. Mike Reese of ESPN.com actually alludes to the fact that it could be a tribute to Kobe because it's reminiscent of a Nike commercial that he was in. So I'm a jerk for making fun of Tom Brady. If it is, sorry about that.
Yeah. No, watch your mouth, Jess.
That's
come on.
Just like Brady to post some sort of cryptic picture that will then make us all feel bad about ourselves.
He is the Tom Brady.
Next. Baker Mayfield actually regrets some things that he said this year, stating that he has a lot to learn and he put his foot in his mouth a lot.
What did he do that was screwed up?
He talked a lot, didn't he?
He did talk a lot, but I think he's always going to talk a lot. I mean, I guess. I actually think that Baker Mayfield, of all the different people associated with the Cleveland Browns, he was the one I came out. I thought he handled things pretty well.
Yeah, he wasn't going over to sidelines asking to be traded like Jarvis Landry or Odell Beckham Jr. He didn't kick anyone in the face like Greg Robinson. And he didn't bash anyone with a helmet like Myles Garrett. So, yes, he's looking great as far as all Cleveland Browns go. And he's not Freddie Kitchens, which is also just very easy.
Who then wore a T-shirt saying Pittsburgh started it. All of that stuff actually happened. What a weird year for them.
You know, any time Baker Mayfield was at a mic, though, the world listened. And so, you know, you got his brashness. You know, with the Rex Ryan comments, oh, if you don't wear orange and brown, you don't matter. All that stuff. People ran with it, and that's what made the news. But you're right. I actually still like Baker. I think he gets a little in his feelings on social media with some things that are said about him.
Or in the tunnel before a game.
Or that. But you're right.
Do you get mad about something? Oh, to a fan.
Right, a fan was a fan basically said, yeah, you're not doing so well. And Baker says, why don't you come down here and say that to me? And the fan said, oh, well, I actually can't do that. You know that, Baker. It was a great response.
It was a good response. I have no problem with people telling fans they're being idiots.
Longtime Panther Greg Olsen, he's a tight end, has parted ways with the team, but he still wants to play.
Did you take a shot at Greg Olsen?
I mean, selfishly, why not? But I think it would be best for the United States of America for Greg Olsen to be in a broadcasting booth.
Greg, you think it's our best interest to have him calling games?
Yes, Greg with an abnormal amount of legs, Olsen, should be out there. He needs to be in a booth. He really does, because he was fantastic. I think as I've heard him in interviews, I've heard him on podcasts. I would really like to hear what he's got to say in the booth. I think he would be really good.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that. I'd like to see Seahawks take. I'd love to see him on the Seahawks roster. I don't think that'd hurt.
Why not? At this point, you do need another tight end.
Yeah, pair him. Have Disley. Add Greg Olsen. Get another guy coming back.
What does that mean for Jacob Hollister? Are you out on Jacob Hollister?
No, I think Hollister should be back on the team. I just think that you've got to add to that group. You've got to add to Hollister, Disley. Having Olsen as the third guy, I mean, maybe you get another guy that's more, but I think that might actually work.
The big question I have is of all the guys, who is going to be ready? Is Will Disley going to be ready? And then for Jacob Hollister, is he going to be back? Like that is a positional group that we haven't really discussed a whole lot since the end of the season. It's a pretty important one for this team.
Other guys who still want to play quarterback, Ryan Fitzmagic.
Yes.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, he will not retire and wants to play in 2020.
Yes!
Who's he going to play with? Would he stay in Miami?
I think so.
He's still under contract, I believe.
I think that the best solution for Miami is that they get Tua Tagovailoa, they don't put him out on the field the first year, and they let Ryan Fitzpatrick play in front. And here's the thing about having a guy like Fitzpatrick. He's going to win you games. He's going to prevent you from getting like a number one pick or something like that. But for a young team that really, I think, made some serious and really impressive strides, shout out to Brian Flores for that down the stretch in the second half of the year, beating the Patriots in the season finale. This is the kind of quarterback that I think that they need to have around, because even though he throws a lot of interceptions and he can be careless with the football, I don't think there are many quarterbacks that are not thought to be franchise quarterbacks that are more beloved in locker rooms than Fitzpatrick.
Ryan Fitzpatrick is a player who is just good enough to get you fired. He's just good enough to convince you that we can win some games with him.
But
he's not good enough to actually win the games. He's great if you don't expect to win. If you think that, hey, this is a season where we expect to be 6-10, he's a great quarterback to have, because he might get you to 8-8, might get you to 9-7. If you're a team that you're like, yeah, we need to make the playoffs this year, Fitzpatrick is not good enough to do that.
Watching him is like watching a more likable and goofier version of Jameis Winston, because you really have no idea what you're going to get. You could get a 4, 5, 6 touchdown performance, which I once witnessed firsthand after he'd been benched for Ryan Mallett for a couple of weeks, or he could throw 3 interceptions, 4 interceptions and a half.
I will also say this, that I saw a rumor that maybe the Packers are interested in Josh Rosen, and I just started cackling.
The idea that is funny.
Yes, the idea that the idea that Aaron Rodgers is going to mentor Josh Rosen and he might be the successor is fantastic.
They have the same face.
Yes. The same person.
Yeah, except Rosen's not any good. Like that's the problem. Like Rosen's terrible.
I you know what? I liked Rosen in college, and I think that he has been the victim of two of the worst possible situations that he could be in. Arizona, garbage. And in Miami, at first, garbage. I would like to see him in a situation where he can sit behind and wait in the wings behind a good quarterback. Yes, I know that would mean in Green Bay. I think that he has gotten a bad rap.
I think that he is someone who has all of the tools, and people will constantly talk themselves into the idea that he'll be able to overcome his attitude and approach to the team. He's the guy who complains about the valet scratching his father's car. Like, that's what he is. He's the guy that gets really mad, the level of entitlement, and like, I don't understand. He's not built to succeed in the NFL.
I'm going to ask you this really quickly. Do you think that Josh Rosen could have a career like Jay Cutler? And that would be
no, because he's not as good as Cutler. Like Cutler, for all of the different things that you say about Cutler, Cutler's absolutely a gunslinger. He didn't care that people didn't like him. Josh Rosen cares very deeply what other people think about him. You cannot have that kind of personality, that kind of like, hey, I'm arrogant and aloof and kind of indifferent to people, and I think that I'm better than them, if you actually care how they think about you. And Josh Rosen does actually care what people think about him. It's Danny and Gallant, an introduction to, in some ways, the NFL's new world order begins this weekend. We'll explain next.
Hi, this is Seattle University head basketball coach Jim Hayford. We're glad you're listening and along for the ride.
Seattle U takes on California Baptist Saturday, February 1st at Showare Center. Tickets at GoSeattleU.com.
Join us for Red Hawks basketball on 770 KTTH.
This hour is brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It is Danny and Gallant. I've been advertising the Super Bowl as the NFL's new world order. No Brady. It's the first time that's happened in, what, 3 years? And he's been in four of the past five. There's no Manning, neither Eli nor Peyton. So yes, it's the first time in 8 years that we've had no quarterbacks named either Manning or Brady. Two first-time quarterbacks, two teams that are kind of just happy to be here. There's a lot of excitement. This is a fresh. I'm looking forward to that. There being new storylines here.
And you mentioned the just happy to be there part of it. I actually have enjoyed how loose both teams have felt this week at the Super Bowl. And I'm wondering if that is a byproduct of the Patriots not being there. First off, the Patriots just being somewhat rigid in terms of not trying to show any personality because they think it's like a sign of weakness or whatever during the week. But I also think there's an element, too, of when you look at this, of teams not being maybe nervous about the New England Patriots being on the other side of things. I don't know if you get that vibe, Danny, but that's...
Oh, everybody's been so scared of the Patriots. Like, oh, we better not say anything. No, I haven't gotten that vibe. Patriots aren't somebody people walk around in fear of. Somebody that we generally tend to be just tired of. Just annoyed.
Well, they are definitely tired of them, but come on.
Nobody's,
there's got to be...
Nobody's scared.
There's a fear
general
element.
Annoyance, I would say.
There's a fear element there.
Fear, no. Respect, yes. And understanding it's a really good team. Nobody's watching. Oh, we're going to face the New England Patriots.
Who is a feared team? Like, we need a basis of comparison.
Well, I think this year, Kansas City, definitely because of the offense. As far as other teams across the league, I mean, the Ravens just completely barfed on themselves. So you can't say them, really. San Francisco, we've watched the Seahawks play them twice. They don't scare
the Saints during the regular season?
I think at times the Saints, but we also saw the 49ers beat them on the road. So really, like, the only team, if you were talking about fear this season, a Death Star-esque team, it's only Kansas City.
I'm excited to see what happens, and I'm definitely, my worst-case scenario is clearly Richard Sherman intercepting a pass to clinch a San Francisco win. Like, that would be the doomsday scenario for me. And
then a Saint, thank you, Seattle, at the end.
A begrudging respect for him. He gets to say whatever he wants.
Yeah.
If that happens, you just got to sit there and take it. Like, and you can gnash your teeth and wring your hands, and he's earned the right to say that. I'm hoping that it does not come down to that. I'm hoping that that's not the outcome. I'd like to see Jimmy Garoppolo get picked off three times. I think that I would love to have the storyline hanging over San Francisco next year. If you've got everything, do you have the quarterback? I think that'd be best case scenario for Seattle, is that something happens that causes them to question the quarterback, because that's really the only thing in my mind that hasn't been definitively answered. They've got a window of opportunity with their defense. They're not going to be able to keep this defense together for very long, given how many good defensive linemen they have. But if they have the right quarterback, their window, like this run that they could have, is just beginning. They're in the very early stages of that.
I'm distracted right now, and it's because of something very similar to the flight that I took to Miami this past weekend. I see a 49er fan flexing right now. There's a 49er, like, we're in a fishbowl in this studio, Danny, and I can see through it, and there's someone that's, like, directly across the hall. And I'm you know what I'm sick of? I'm sick of every single Friday seeing this guy wearing something San Francisco 49ers.
You know, he's got quite a collection. I talked
to
him today about it. Well, it's great. He's got a Navarro Bowman jersey, too, and it's Nick Bowman. He actually, it spelled the same way in everything. He didn't even have to get it customized. You got to respect a Bowman jersey.
I respect a Bowman jersey, but he's flexing it. Like, right now, he's just, like, sitting back. He's like, ugh.
You got to have a little bit of respect for that, because he's worn it every single Friday throughout the season.
Yeah,
Seahawks were still in it. Seahawks were playing them. I give him some respect.
That is true. The worst fear side of it, Danny, for me, is that I just don't. I have not experienced it firsthand like you have, the insufferability of the 49er fan base. But I know, like, I'm aware of it. I am aware of it from afar. I'm really nervous about this.
But having to deal with it,
yeah.
It's Seattle, so people are going to get. I remember what happened last time, though. They were in the Super Bowl, as they ended up watching Jim Harbaugh fervently appeal for a holding penalty on their last throw into the end zone when they didn't get it in the game that's best remembered for the power going out
yeah.
at halftime, right? It took a long time for the second half to get underway. That was very satisfying. Like, you just have to lean into your haterness. Like, you can enjoy watching a team lose. The flip side of that is if they don't lose, it's almost. It's not worse than watching your own team lose, but watching your opponent that you're rooting against win is a pretty deflating procedure as well, because you're like, I don't even get that joy. It's more salt in the wound, sort of like, oh, I just don't even want to talk about it.
Right. And yeah, that's always awkward, because you don't have anything that you can say in return to it either. You can't take someone down a peg or two when they're walking on cloud nine. You know, for this game, Danny, I do think Kansas City is the most dangerous team in this game. But I have just gotten this weird vibe, and it's really over the last like 30 hours or so that Kansas City is a little bit too full of themselves for a team that fell backwards into getting a first round bye, for a team that honestly hasn't beaten a whole lot of impressive teams this season. Yeah, a semblance of the New England Patriots. They did beat the Baltimore Ravens before the Ravens turned into the Ravens early on in the year. But down the stretch, I didn't really find any of their victories to be that impressive. They still, to me, are a team that lost at home to the Houston Texans early on in the regular season. And I just think there's something about the way that they're carrying themselves this week where it's similar to the Galactic Empire and the Death Star. Yeah, they might have all those explosive firepowers that can dismantle a planet, but I just think that their focus is going to lend itself to something we've seen from them in their last three playoff games, a poor first half start. They can get themselves out of a hole when they get into a poor first half start, but I think the Niners are going to win this one.
I think unless San Francisco, if San Francisco has fewer than five sacks, I don't see them winning this game.
Five. That is a high number.
Yes. I think that I don't think they'll win this game unless they're able to really wreck Kansas City's offense based on pass pressure. I think if Mahomes either has time to throw or is able to buy time by moving to throw, I think that they're going to exploit San Francisco's secondary. I think Kansas City wins 39-33.
And I
think, yes, I don't think there's going to be, because I believe Kansas City has an average defense. And I think San Francisco's offense is pretty good. I think Kansas City's offense is great. I think it's one of the league's great offenses. One of the top two or three offenses, really, of the past 4 or 5 years. I think it's up there with what we saw from the Rams when the Rams were really humming the first half of last season. I think it's a great offense, and I think we're going to see it at its best. And unless San Francisco is able to really wreck what Kansas City does on offense, I think if Kansas City gets above 30 points, they're winning this game.
Who is the better of the two coaches, Andy Reid or Kyle Shanahan?
Andy Reid, because he's been through more.
Reid has been through more, but Kyle Shanahan has... I have the utmost respect for Kyle Shanahan. I am a big believer, and I know I brought this up yesterday. I think that the reason that the Falcons were that flash in the pan that they were with Matt Ryan is entirely because of Kyle Shanahan. And I do look at what he's been able to do over the last couple of years, and with all due respect to Andy Reid, who I think is one of the best offensive minds that we've seen in the game the last two decades. I am curious as to if a win for Kyle Shanahan puts him above Andy Reid in that department. I think it's a little bit closer, even though there isn't a whole lot of track record for Kyle Shanahan, because he's done a really good job in his career, mostly as an assistant coach, especially getting this team from where they were last year to this big game.
What have we seen when young coaches, young offensive-minded coaches, get to this stage?
We saw Sean McVay last year. I mean, he scored 3 points.
Yes. And I think that Kyle Shanahan, because he has a flat-brim hat, and because he's the first of the flat-brim hat coaches we've seen, I think that that's indicative, not of any sort of...
little tiny logo on it.
Yeah, it's not indicative of any sort of... It's just, he's young. He's young. He's got more to learn. And I think that I think there are going to be mistakes that his offense makes. And I think it's going to set up. And I think that the 49ers are going to pay for that in the volume of points that Kansas City ends up scoring. I think the flat brim hats will be 0-1 in Super Bowl history after this game.
And he's got this weird hat, too, where like the logo is just so, it's unbelievably small. Have you noticed that? It's like smaller every week.
Well, it's similar to the hat I'm actually wearing right now in that it's a small logo. It's surf culture. Like he's in Northern California. There's a bit of, like, I'm very familiar with the surf culture. The small logo is very hip, and it underscores the fact that he's a young little whippersnapper.
Apparently his wife won't let him change the hat with the tiny logo. She thinks it would mess with the Niners. This is per the
well. How about does she mandate that he not curve the bill of his hat?
I guess
they're like, no, you've got to wear a hat like you're 22 years old.
You know what? Honestly, even if you're 22, I just don't think the flat brim looks good. I just think it looks weird. Like I always I buy flat brims, but I always curve it. Does that make me a dad? I don't know.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, there's definitely a dad. I think I've got some flat brims. Yeah, I'll rock a flat brim from time to time.
You like side? Like, what do you?
I rock a flat brim hat. I'm a flat brim person.
Okay, well, flat brim. Like, is what do you do? You just
put it straight
in front of you. You don't bend it, Paul. It's not that complicated.
You like to the, you tilt it to the side? Like
Only generally left-handers, like my wife's left-handed, she'll rock it to the side a little bit. Like Arthur Rhodes was your quintessential lefty with a little bit off-center.
Yeah, Arthur Rhodes, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, like the left to center.
I love how closers all did that. Like, hey, we're just tilted to the side just a little bit.
A little bit offbeat. It is Danny and Gallant. We're going to raise flags. That's coming up next.
From the pocket and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
We have reached the final segment of the final show of the final week before the Super Bowl. It's time for us to throw flags, which actually was a topic. I'm going to raise a flag for Michael Bumpus. Hearing Bump get a little bit outraged was awesome. He did not like Troy Vincent's justification of the way the pass interference challenges were instituted this year.
He shouldn't. I mean, there's no justification for it, and they have to realize this, the NFL. Like, there's no point in acting as if it was different than what everyone saw. Just admit that, yeah, we came up with a rule change that wasn't much of a rule change, and we made a mistake.
I'm okay if they say we came up with a rule change that wasn't much of a rule change, so coaches should stop challenging as much. I won't hate it if that rule comes back the same way. I won't hate it. I would prefer that they completely take away the replay challenges of pass interference. But if they're going to keep it in, I would rather they keep it the way it is rather than broaden it.
Can they take Pete aside in particular? And we love Pete, but Pete and his eternal optimism, his fatal optimism. Like, he knows he's not going to win these challenges when he throws the flag out there.
I agree with you 100%. Like, that's the biggest downside that I can see is that we are going to be subjected to constantly, hey, why did you challenge that? Because I thought it was pass interference. Yeah, it doesn't matter if you thought it was. They're not going to change it. Why did you challenge it? I can foresee that. Yes, your objection is noted. Yeah, there is a little bit of spite.
I'd like to return this. Reason? Spite.
Was it Garrett this year that got a penalty for the way
that was hilarious. He threw it like down on the ground, and then the referee threw it as high as he possibly could in the air.
You know what? The referee should have gotten in trouble for that. Hey,
I liked
it. Get out of your feelings.
I liked it. It was peacocking. It was great. He's like, oh, you're going to throw it on the ground? I'm going to throw it way up in the air. It's like an umpire and a manager chest bumping over a plate that's been kicked dust over. I love it.
It was more nuh-uh.
I kind of feel like you're a piece of furniture, official. You should take whatever is given to you, and I don't want you having feelings about any of it at all. Like, look, I don't think that people should give you too hard of a time, but ultimately when the guys are actually on the field, you should take whatever they're going to give you.
They're like old pieces of furniture with poor eyesight, like a Davenport.
Your ageism on officials.
Like, it's
the
accurate.
Fact that you think if they were younger and worked harder, they'd be better.
No,
as
I think
hilarious.
If they were younger, they'd be able to see better and move more quickly. Is that wrong?
Yes.
Why is it
terrible?
Wrong?
Because their expertise is also increasing. So you're just saying you want the newest people to the league who don't have as much experience.
But don't you think that most referees are essentially like in their 50s? Like,
yes.
Why aren't there referees in their like 30s? Couldn't someone be doing the same amount, like being a referee from age 22 or something like that on 10
because
years of
experience?
Because
you need experience.
And they might be rash and impetuous, and they might throw flags 50 feet in the air because they get their feelings hurt.
Well,
by
but these
coach.
Are the old fuddy-duddies, apparently.
No, it was younger referee. That
was that a younger
ref?
Okay. Yeah. I just assume. Paint with a broad brush, people. You'll never.
That's another thing young people assume. They assume a lot. Another reason not to have 30-year-old referees is I just assumed the ball hit the ground.
It might
be a reason. You don't know any better because you haven't been around the block a few times.
It might be a reason to not have 30-year-old talk show hosts, too.
Yes.
I'm going to raise a flag for Kelly Brownson. Now, you might not know her name, but she was just hired as the chief of staff for the Browns under Kevin Stefanski. She's 30 years old, and it's the first time that a woman has been hired in the NFL at that role. She was an intern with the Bills, and she was an assistant coach at Dartmouth, and she also played quite a bit. She played for 7 years as a free safety and running back for the DC Divas in the WFA. So shout out to Callie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
very young there with the Browns. You got 32-year-old GM.
If you're an Ivy Leaguer or you went to a good school and you're 30-something, Paul, it would be a perfect place for you.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
I want to take back my flag that I raised for Michael Bumpus, and I want to raise it for Lydia because that's the first time burn. I've ever heard her take a solid cheap shot at somebody. It was awesome.
No, I like it. Like, see, this is the best part about Lydia is that Lydia's so positive. But Lydia will take shots, and I like that. I'm resistant.
Sorry, Paul.
No.
I'm sorry, Hitsy.
Now a flag has been thrown on Lydia for unnecessary apology.
Exactly. I'm throwing the flag at Lydia for the unnecessary apology. Here's what I'm throwing my flag on. I'm throwing my flag on the idea of Frank Clark winning a Super Bowl. I think that it would create a monster. Guys, I know we're rooting for Kansas City in this one over San Francisco, but do you really want the Frank Clark World Tour to begin?
I kind of do.
You do?
Yeah, because I think that next year, that's when it would implode then. I'm totally fine with him becoming a monster and then them having to deal with it on the other end. Like, what's that going to be like next year? Talk about a Super Bowl hangover. What's Frank Clark, the Frank Clark World Tour, going to look like? Like, he might be, it would be a very different character that he would be in next
year.
Guys,
we need that content. Okay. Let's root for that.
That's going to do it. He is Paul Gallant.
Can I raise mine really quickly? I just want to say raise mine for Russ and Sierra having baby number three.
Yes.
I do want to throw a flag, though. Russ, explaining his coolness, I can say as an expert of being very uncool for very many years, anytime you go ahead and explain why you're cool, it just never works out. And throwing a sports analogy in there doesn't help. It just doesn't make it cooler. It defeats the purpose if you have to explain why you're cool.
I agree.
It's a really good point.
Very, very well said. Yeah.
It's like explaining the joke.
Hey, I do that too.
Yeah, I know.
He is Paul Gallant, and he kind of believes that once you hit 50, you might as well be put in a home.
And he is Danny O'Neill, and unlike me, he does not need Lelia Cruz to take him down a peg or two from time to time when he's getting a little egomaniacal. So long, farewell, have a great weekend, enjoy the Super Bowl, everybody.
It was just so much fun.